I'm hoping that the imperfection of my life says to people, you don't have to be perfect. You have to be dedicated. So you don't go from being arrested, rejected, you know, dyslexic, and then you be elected to be the mayor of the city of New York. That's some good stuff, man. Believe in yourself. A bend in the road is not the end of the road, as long as you're willing to make the turn. And I've hit some bends in the road, and there's never been the end of the road. And so what I'm going through now, this is a shower compared to the typhoons that I've gone through. So I could deal with a shower every day.
People, here we are. We got a limited time because we got the big cheese from the Big Apple, Mayor Eric Adams, here on Business Untitled Podcast. Thanks for coming.
Good to see you. You know, and it's interesting. I met each one of you in three different aspects, and it is all coming together, the intersectionality of, you know, talking business and, you know, other aspects of the city. I'm looking forward to this talk.
I think we were going to get right into, like, the why of this podcast. I know you had asked, like, hey, why are we doing this thing? What are we talking about here? And I think Mel is the guy that's the best to explain that.
It's all about Flatbush.
So yep. Flatbush forever. Flatbush gave me a plaque recently. I like that.
Good stuff.
I donate a lot to Flatbush, so they said, here's a plaque. Spelled my name wrong, but
that's true. Hard name to spell.
Put two L's instead of one, but I'll accept it. But no, this came about because the last 8 years or so I've been around Mike and Dave, where they come from a different world. Mike, middle class. Dave was born a little upper class and both made it separately. I come from, you know, my background, just Flatbush, Trinidad. And it was like I was in a class every single day with just my friends, two of my best friends, mentors, brothers, whatever you want to call them. And I kept bringing, kept saying, man, I need people from my community to kind of like things you and I have spoken about on at a different time. I need people from my community to like hear what I'm hearing and understand a different walk of life and understand business. And like now I'm a high school dropout that owns, I'm the fifth largest franchise owner in Bojangles and, you know, doing stuff with Mike and Dave and real estate. And it was just like, I need my community to see this. So I would always bring, I took them to Flatbush and had them meet guys from Flatbush. And Mike is now kind of thinks he's the king of Flatbush. He's really popular in Flatbush. And Dave is really popular in Flatbush now. So, and then it became, Mike, I want this guy to meet you. Dave, I want this guy to meet you. And I'm like, oh, I can't bring everybody from Flatbush to Mike's house. And I had one particular friend, and this is where it really was like, I got to do something. One friend that Mike invited to his house, very nice guy, still involved in a ton of shit. And Mike was like, yeah, just come to my office and bring all your friends. I'm like, you know what you asking for right now? So I was like, how can we get this message out of just our conversations I've had with them, conversations you and I have had a ton of different times just about life, a different perspective on life, business more than anything, and advice. And how can we get a different guy like yourself in the seat to tell their story, tell their journey, tell their resilience? And that's how it came about.
Yeah, and I would add to that as well, like usually we have more, I won't say traditional, but business people on here, but I think the city's really interesting as a business, number one, and two, just how it supports business, right? And all the initiatives, how you study data and how you put initiatives into place really to support business. I think sometimes people don't understand that cities are just like big companies in many ways.
Without a doubt. I have 320,000 employees.
Wow.
$106 billion budget. And when you look at this, there's a real narrative to, you know, me being a mayor of the city of New York. This is the most important city on the globe. When my colleagues come from all over the globe during UN Week, UN National Assembly Week, they sit around the room and they'll talk about number two, number three, and they look over at me and say, we're not even going to talk about number one. We know who number one is, and that's New York
City. Is anyone prepared for that many employees, like you came from politics, not running a business. I guess Mayor Bloomberg came from a business, but it was a small business relative to the city. Mm-hmm. Like, are you prepared coming in because you're managing sanitation, you're managing police, you're managing fire, you're managing city life? You've got all these different divisions, if you think. But how do you approach?
No, this is.
And
where
are you prepared?
This is so. What you're saying is so important. I grew up in a very religious household, and the foundation of everything I do is in my religious belief. And you cannot. You could just randomly open any place in the Bible, and you're going to see conflict. I don't care if it's Jesus being homeless. I don't care if somebody's destroying a whole city like Solomon and Gomorrah. It's conflict. The Bible is conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, I understand that life is about conflict. And how do you not try to say, I hope I don't have conflict? If there was conflict during the days of Jesus, there's darn sure going to be conflict during the days of Eric.
Mm-hmm.
And so my life journey is so important. And I just want to continue to have ordinary people see this perfectly imperfect person. You know, if you were to go to Webster and look up imperfection, you're going to see my face there. You know, I dropped the ball so many times. You know, growing up in South Jamaica, Queens, dyslexic, did not want to go to school, running numbers as a child. You know, talking about business entrepreneurship. I used to buy a nickel bag, make 8 joints so I could get $3 for mommy to help pay for food on the table. You know, got arrested as a child, 15 years old. You know, people constantly rejected me. So you don't go from being arrested, rejected, you know, dyslexic, and then you be elected to be the mayor of the city of New York? That's some good stuff, man. And so all those people, if you sitting in Rikers Island right now and people say, well, your life is over. I say, hold up. My mail went through this. If you're in school right now saying that, damn, I can't learn, man, because I got ADD, I have a learning disability. Wait, my mayor has that. So I'm hoping that the imperfection of my life says to people, you don't have to be perfect. You have to be dedicated. You have to be willing to take the body shots. Mm-hmm. And sit on that stool, take a deep breath, and then get your butt back in that ring and fight on. That's what it's about. And that's what I'm hoping. Those who are on the verge of homelessness, those who live in domestic violence, of those who are scrambling and struggling, I'm hoping that they look and say, man, this is an imperfect cat. This is this bald-headed, earring-wearing, authentic guy that's running the most important city on the globe.
What's been the hardest thing? You came in, you were, you know, borough president of Brooklyn. You were a cop before that.
Right.
So now you're running this city. What's been the hardest thing?
You know, people say all the time that being a mayor of the city of New York is the second hardest job in politics. And I say, when is the hard part? People get upset when I say it. But I'm not picking cotton. I'm not waking up in the middle of the early morning hours picking cotton all night. I'm not having someone kick in my cabin door and rape my wife, my son, my daughter. I'm not having someone whip me just because I want to be called my name. So all hard needs to be put in perspective. Mommy raised 6 of us. We knew what the children in her daycare center ate every day because she brought recycled aluminum foil and Tupperware bowls, and she would bring home the leftovers and feed us. So when people say, okay, Eric, you know, this is hard, I got 302,000 people. You know, I'm not picking up the garbage. I have an agency.
Yeah.
I'm not patrolling the streets. I have an agency that's doing it. I'm not teaching the children. I have an agency that's doing it. So hard is in perspective.
Yeah.
Wake up with the energy that I must move the ball down the field. And I never sit around and say, you know, oh, woe is me. Look what's happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
No, listen, you don't climb the mountain and then complain about the view. I'm at the top of the mountain. I'm the mayor of the city of New York. Every day I need to be blessed.
You know, I was going to say resilience is a theme that everybody talks about, and that's part of what you're saying, right? It's like appreciation, gratitude, resilience. I'm going to flip Mike's question for 1 second, which was what's the biggest challenge or the hardest part, and say what are the initiatives you're most excited about and how do you plan to get them done?
Love that. Archbishop Desmond Tutu has a quote. We spend a lifetime pulling people out of the river. No one goes upstream and prevent them from falling in the first place. We have a downstream mindset in the city and in the country. We have prophetized poverty. No one wants to turn around poverty because people are making so much money off of poverty. Little Johnny's dyslexic. I do dyslexia screening so we could catch him ahead of time. The system previously was, let's wait for little Johnny to get arrested. 30 to 40% of the people in Rikers Island are dyslexic. Wow. So you're going to make that paper by, okay, now let's get little Johnny and give all these programs for him. Why didn't we take our ass upstream and say, let's stop little Johnny from falling in the river? Foster care children, they age out. We know what's going to happen to 600 to 700 of them every year. They're going to be homeless, mental health issues, unemployed, victims of crime or criminal behavior. So what I say, we're now sponsoring foster care children to pay their college tuition and giving them a stipend so they don't fall into the river. Then we pull them out later when they're homeless or going through the crisis. Mm-hmm. That is my entire operation of how do we start building a new generation of young people that are not being pushed or fall into the river so we don't pull them out later downtime. Right. Now, you know where the pushback is coming from? People who are making the paper from them being pulled out of the river.
Yeah.
You know, those are the ones that you hear protest about me and angry about me. And, you know, what are you doing? I'm messing with people paper. And messing with people paper, I don't care if it's messing with people paper on Nostrand Avenue because they're slinging drugs or messing with people paper who's on Park Avenue making money off of all of these institutions. People don't like you messing with their paper.
Right. Now, that makes a lot of sense. And that's really clear, right? I mean, this is one of the major problems in politics is that there's so many entrenched interests, effectively. Right, and so to drive through that, to lead through that, right, it takes fortitude, takes strategy as well, right? So what are some of your strategies for dealing with that? Personally, like, I look at, I know we just talked about dyslexia, education. Even the housing crisis in this city, when I look at it, I think, you know, there's so many things they're trying to pile on to this housing, right? Whether it's union, tenant rights, breaks for tax abatements to get more new development, zoning codes. There's all these things that come together. And what happens? Nothing. And then everybody says, why is housing so important in this city? It's because you're not letting property owners invest back in with major capital improvements without a fight. You're not letting new development come without a fight and stitching a whole bunch more tenant rights on, which there's nothing wrong with tenant rights in the abstract, but we got to get development going.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. You know, there's a book Carter G. Wilson penned, The Miseducation of the Negro, and he talks about if you're so used to going through the back door that if you walked and you're told there's no back door, you're going to make a back door to walk through because that's where your mind is. You're just used to being treated as second class. And when you look at all of these issues, there are layers to these issues. It's just a housing issue. We have a 1% vacancy rate, 1%, meaning that the average person who's looking for a house is going to be challenging to look for a house. We give people vouchers where if you are of a low income, we would pay your rent until you get self-sustaining, but they can't find housing because there's no available housing and a lot of housing is not on the market. So we need Albany to allow us to incentivize building more. We have an inventory problem and we need Albany to allow us to use some of our vacant office buildings so that we can convert them into housing. There's a whole debate that's going on in Albany right now in making that happen. That's preventing us to have the housing to give that person who has a voucher. So when you look at the layers, and then you look in the city council, where we are doing, we call it a city of yes, where we want to build all over the city. You have areas in this city that they have access to good food, good hospital, good transportation, good education, but they build no affordable housing in the area. On Monday, they rally with the low-income New Yorkers and say, we need housing, we need housing, we need housing. But on Tuesday, they say, wait a minute, you can't build it on my block.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So we're saying the whole city needs to share the housing.
Right.
And build affordable housing throughout the city.
Yeah. I'm going to add one more little thing to that as well, which is I think the one-size-fits-all policy on affordable is also a little bit misguided in that in Manhattan, clearly there needs to be affordable housing, right?
Yes.
Staten Island, where I know you guys just approved a big timber project in that North Shore waterfront, and I've done a lot of development over there, right? That's somewhere where even my market rents are only at 100, 105% of median. That's not a 200, 300% median income. And so when I, what I really feel is like just getting housing and disposable income in places like that to bring back real stores, real shopping, so that it's not a food swamp and it's not no retail. So sometimes I think it's not one size fits all, and it's important for the city, and this gets lost in the shuffle as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, hey, there may be 80%, 100% median in a sense to create more housing, but I don't know that Staten Island, this is my personal opinion, needs more 40 and 50% median income on that North Shore in terms of developing that neighborhood correctly. You hear what I'm saying? Versus
and
other places
well
that are...
Said,
yeah.
Well said. And when you look at what Dan Gorotnik has done, who's in charge of planning for us, he analyzed based on where we need the housing and how do we go about finding the right mix of affordability. Because when people think affordability, they think low income only. No, my teacher and accountant, we're losing. We lost, you know, almost 200,000 folks who have left this city because of the lack of affordability. We have to connect that word affordability to what is actually planned on the ground and have the right mix of housing
to
accomplish
like,
that.
Just for our audience to know, I believe, like, median income for two people in Staten Island is about, I think it's about $100,000, $110,000,
yes,
something.
I don't know the exact number.
Something
in that.
That's the range, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, you know, it's hard to live in the city at $110,000 with two people. It's not like you're, you know, breaking
imagine
it in.
And three children with that.
That's right. Yeah, and then exactly.
Right,
you know, so it's really that middle, I think, needs more focus.
And that's what I did. When I was having what's called mayor classes when I was running.
Mm-hmm.
I brought in experts from all over the globe. And in the morning times, from like 7 to 8, 8 to 9, I would bring them in, and we would have these Zooms, because it was during COVID. And I would ask them, give me ideas based on your expertise. And we hammered out a real plan, a 100-point plan. People need to look at that, because we've accomplished many of those 100 points that's in there. And one of the areas around housing that they communicated is the bureaucracy of building housing. No one wants to build in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think about it, and we need to think differently about why is it taking so long to build housing. We had to revamp Department of Building, revamp HBD. We had to change. These are the agencies that are responsible for our housing. And even inspections, sprinkler inspections, you know, take so long. Everything took so long. Why? If I'm employed in an agency and I have my home, you know, I have my home, I'm chilling, you know? So there's no urgency. Because we've been gauging people on how many stop work orders did I give you for building,
right,
instead of gauging people how many units of housing did we put up. So HBD and DOB, Department of Buildings, and FDNY, everyone that's part of the housing building must be on the same page. The goal is to build more housing.
Right.
The goal is not to be siloed and said, I'm just going to see how many stop work orders I could do. Could we stop that madness of stop work orders? You know, when you come in, you're building, and all of a sudden you have a plumbing problem. We want to give you a stop work order for the entire job. That has nothing to do with your carpentry. That has nothing to do with your electricity. That has nothing to do with your ironwork. So we said, wait a minute. And stop the part of the job that's a problem, and don't stop the job. When you close down an entire job, you have all of these people standing by.
That's right.
Where you paying thousands of dollars. And we were hurting developers in this city because there was an anti-development energy in this city.
Yeah, and then that goes to create higher prices because developers
right.
basically put that into the equation. And I think it's important to tie together, too, that cities like businesses... New York is the greatest city on earth. It's the number one city. But it's getting competition from Austin, from Dallas, from Miami. And so we still have to compete in a way. And housing's a part of that, right? There's other things, too, we can talk about. But that's I just wanted to connect that.
That's the big mistake that people make, that we could just live off our brand. That's just not true. Austin is growing. Miami is growing. You have some other great cities that are out there. But we should always go back January 1st, 2022, I inherited a mess. You know, crime was surging, 40% increase in crime. Bond raters had a low bond rating. These are the independent economic experts that determine how well the city is being managed. We had a low bond rating. No one wanted to be on our subway system. Tourism was hurting. Coming out of COVID, you know, our children were not learning in schools. 2 years and 2 months later, highest number of private and public sector jobs in the history of the city. Highest number in the history of the city. 300,000 just since my time in being in office. Decreasing homicide, decreasing shootings, double digits, decreasing the major crime. 4.1 million people back on our subway system. Fitch and other bond rating, the independent economic experts, have raised our bond rating, and they've indicated the way this guy is managing the city right now. 62 million tourists have come back to our city, pumping billions into our economy. And no matter what anyone says, we got the World Cup, baby, and the finals.
Mayor, you got thrown a curveball early on.
A curveball? What's that called? Backup pitch. He was trying to swing for my head.
Well, listen, the immigrant problem, which is plaguing Biden, which is plaguing the Democrats. Listen, Mel's an immigrant. I'm the grandson of immigrants. We're all immigrants. We're all pro-immigrants. This is a pro-immigrant city. Other than the fact that when you have as many that are coming at the same time,
right.
It kind of crushes the infrastructure. And it's become a political hot potato. I think Biden, actually, if he doesn't do something about the border, is going to lose the election. But you kind of got stuck in between as a guy who is the mayor of a city with the right to abode. You know, Mayor Koch way back saying, let's get people off the streets and into housing, which is a great idea. But now that's being overwhelmed. How do you think you're doing with that? And what else can you do?
Okay, let's break that down for a moment because there's a reason the term Monday morning quarterback is introduced into our vocabulary, because sitting in the bleachers watching the game is different from being hit by a 350-pound lineman, and then you got to get your ass back up and still move the ball down the field. So break down this migrant asylum seekers, because many people don't understand it. They're listening through sound bites. Okay, Eric, why don't you stop the buses from coming in? I can't. It's against the law. Why don't you deport those who commit serious crimes? I can't. It's against the law. Why don't you allow them to work so they can provide for themselves? I can't. It's against the law. Why can't you say, well, you're just not going to feed or house people? I can't. It's against the law. So the national government said, hey, we got a problem. We're going to dump that into New York, and we're not going to give you any resources to handle it. We spent $4 billion. They gave me $100 million, and it took a long time. They tried to pay me $13 for hotel rooms reimbursement. Can you find a hotel? You can't find a doorknob for $13.
I think, Eric, to add on to that for our viewers, I think because some of our viewers are watching right now and they're saying, well, you're the mayor, change the law. And I think it's very important to let them know that change that law?
And I'm glad you said that. No.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Because there are three levels of government. There's federal, there's state, and there's city. These are federal laws for
that
the most part.
You cannot change
and the city
at all.
Law, right. The city law is coming through the city council. As you said, going back to the days of Koch, when Koch created the sanctuary city and those others laws, that's at the city council. The mayor does not make the law. The mayor will have to sign the law after the city council passes it. And I have no control of the federal law or the state laws. So I'm being managed by state laws and federal laws and one city council law that impacts this issue.
I think that's really important.
It is. It is. But here's what I said. Listen, in New Yorkers, I got it. You didn't elect me to define the problem. You elected me to solve the problem.
Yeah.
That's my role. No one, Bill Clinton, shared that with me. And when I sat down with the president blocks from here and spoke with him and said, Mr. President, this is an issue. You know, this is back in 2022. This is an issue, and it's going to play out across the country. Mm-hmm. And everyone just basically poo-pooed this and said it's no big issue. Now look at Chicago. Look at Los Angeles. Look at San Francisco. Look at Houston. Now it has become a national issue. Denver. All of these folks have now come together and said what Eric was saying is right. So what we did, we had 180,000 migrants and asylum seekers come in. That's 1.5 the size of Albany. Mm-hmm. An entire city dropped into our city, and none of them can work.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about that, man. That's, when we talk about your dad and you, and you, the reason you are where you are now is because the precursor to sleep, to experience the American dream, is the right to work. You can't work. You know how much. You should come with me one day and go to a migrant asylum seeker and see all these people. 3,000 people are living on Randall's Island. And all they say to me when I go up there to visit, we just want to work. We don't want you giving us anything. And so what we did was we said, listen, everybody got 30 days. You have 30 days. We're going to give you intense care. We're going to give you support. We're going to show you how to find your way. After 30 days, you got to do what everyone else has done. You have to find your way in this great city of opportunities or in this country. 80% of people who had those 30 days notification, they went on and found their way. Wow. Out of that 180,000, 60% have gone on and found their journey. But others are saying, no, let people stay forever in the shelters. Come for anywhere you want on the globe to New York and stay as long as you want where you're fed, clothed, housed. Imagine where you would be right now if someone enabled you instead of encouraging you to move on to the next step. I don't believe in a philosophy that we should enable people. That's not what America is. America is not an enabler. America is an encourager. We encourage people to live out the American dream.
How do we change that law about working? Are they working? Like, you know, what's the route to getting it so people can work?
Great question. Federal government. This is very interesting. I had national leaders that came in, national immigrant leaders, immigration leaders. They came to New York, and they came in hating. You know, they were like, "Yeah, we see you on CNN. You know, you're the anti-immigrant guy." You know, they came in. I invited them in.
Uh-huh.
You know, I said, "Come in and see what we're doing." They walked through and saw our our humanitarian relief centers. They saw our what we're doing for children, 30,000 children educated in our school. They saw how we treat people dignified. At the end of the day, they sat down with me at Gracie Mansion, and they said, "No one in the country is doing what you're doing."
Wow.
That's why I'm going to the border on Saturday night, because they want me to go that down so they can stand with me, national leaders, to say we need to duplicate what Eric Adams is doing in New York. We need to change the law. If you're here, give you the authorization to work. This is how we solve this problem instantly. If we were to say you come across the border, there are municipalities in this city, in this country, that are hurting for population and workers, backstreet workers, nurses, professionals, reporters, et cetera. If we were to say you come across the border, you are going to go to this municipality that need workers. You have to stay there for 3 years. After 3 years, you can go anywhere you want in the country. But we have to pair you where the needs of our country is if you want to come to our country. If we allow people to work, that would change this whole scenario. I need lifeguards.
Yeah.
I have a shortage of lifeguards. You know how many people I got from Venezuela that are swimmers and it could be lifeguards instantly?
Yeah.
We need full service workers. We need backstretch workers. We need nurses. We have a nurses shortage crisis. All of these professionals are sitting on the sideline and we're not allowing them to work.
That's such a smart approach. And I've even read in the news, like Topeka, Kansas, I think, is paying people to come there, right? Because they don't have enough workers. I think I read that.
But instead
of having them all in New York, distribute them, you know? And kudos to the mayor for really being on the front end also. We'll switch the topic, but on the front end of identifying that, because you were one of the first people to come out against that or to identify that as an issue.
Love it
down. And took a bunch of heat with the Biden administration at that point in time, and you've been proven right, and I think
the Biden administration
cool solutions.
Is no friend of this city.
They can do it. I don't think, you know, I think the president has been a great president. He has cycled us out of an economic crisis. We were in bad shape coming out of COVID. Sometimes people around us hijack what our missions may be. And you got to stay on top of your team. I'm telling you. You know, you sit down with your team and say, listen, this is the play. We're going to run at the line of scrimmage. And all of a sudden, you see your receiver doing something totally different. You're like, man, I didn't tell you to do that shit. You know, this was the play we called in the huddle. That's how politics is.
I want to say something. Earlier you said, you know, job isn't that hard for two reasons. Things that you've went through in your life that's been way, way harder, and things that our ancestors went through that was way, way harder. And you have how many employees?
320,000.
320,000. So you're almost like a quarterback. But we had this conversation, and I'm going to put you on the spot, because with you, I know that's not true. I remember one night I was waiting to have dinner or something. We was and it was really late. And you came, and you were sweating and looked stressed out. And I was like, you okay? What's going on? And you yourself, not one of your 300-plus thousand employees, was in a police van chasing migrants around, the migrants who are committing crimes around the city on scooters.
Right.
And I remember, this guy is fucking crazy. And I realized it's something you do, just like I've went with you to feed the homeless. We've gone together,
right.
And you're there doing it yourself. And right. I said to you, I said, Eric, why don't you talk about these things? And I realized it's because it's something that you're doing from your heart, something you solely care about the city. But I honestly, I've been spreading that word, and I've been wanting you to touch on that you're not just the quarterback. You're actually throwing the ball, catching it, and running in on the field. And I think it's important that people know that, and you keep those things away from people.
Right,
and
right,
for the
right.
mayor of New York City to be in a van chasing a migrant, he went that way, he went that way. That's something important that we need to know.
Yeah,
and I want to know, why are you in the field like that?
I love that. Because the goal is, I'm not going to run every play.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to do your job if you're running every play. But you need to, you're never going to be a good shepherd if you don't hang out with sheep.
You know? I like that.
You have to, I need to see, hey, what is my cop going through? I need to see, what is it when we start to containerize garbage, like what we're about to do? What it is to deal with the rodent problem? I need to see where the rat holes, what's going on? Because when I go to sit down with the team at my 8 a.m. briefings, I want to bring back what I saw on the ground. It's like that undercover boss mindset.
Yeah. A lot of people are asking me about the rats. What right. are you going to do about the goddamn rats?
Did you see what he did 20 years ago?
They're coming back, apparently. I told five people, we're doing a podcast with the mayor, and they were like, ask him about the rats.
Let him answer
about the rats.
These are probably five people from Tribeca who've seen four rats.
Let him answer.
Here's the thing. There's a process of going from what you felt to what you're feeling. A lot of us live in what we felt. They live in the narrative of what we've already heard. Rat complaints have gone down. We've containerized our garbage. People said it was impossible. All modern cities across the globe have their garbage in containers. Why do we have garbage in plastic bags? That's the all-you-can-eat buffet for rats. We are now, within 2 years, 2.5 years, we're going to be containerizing almost 75% of our garbage. And within the next year, we're going to containerize almost 100%. And so the process is taking garbage off our streets, as we're doing with our restaurants. We started with our eateries, and we're going to continue. You start doing that, you're going to see a drastic decrease. But complaints have gone down citywide. They have gone down in rat mitigation zones. But a lot of people are living, hey, that rat ran across my feet in 2019. I'm still seeing it. Every time I walk down this block, I still feel as though that rat is still here. No, the rat is gone. Mickey is gone, man.
Yeah. is that a shout out for Jessie Tisch as your sanitation commissioner?
Yes,
she is. Doing?
She has been amazing. Her and my rat czar, she has also done a great job. We have we've never had someone that focused just on rats. And we've done that because it's a quality of life issue, and we know that, and we've been doing a great job on it.
Yeah, I think kudos, because I think that putting it in containers has made a big difference
big,
here.
Big,
it's been a big difference.
Difference.
It's honestly crazy to me that that didn't happen before, right? Because we've had rats this whole time,
right?
And boom, he puts in a simple solution. I think it's
I
was just gonna say, and it goes to making this city livable, competitive, right?
There you are.
Some of it has to do with housing. Some of it has to do with safety. Some of it has to do with rats. Some of it has to do with minority women-owned business opportunities, yep. right? Which is something yep. you're also really passionate about.
Very,
I didn't
about,
want to interrupt you if you wanted
huge,
to
huge
hit
about.
Oh, no, no. I was just saying the city just looks cleaner in general. Yeah,
it does. Jessica has done an amazing job, but you're right. My goal was livability, public safety, and lift up working class people. And we started with the foundation that was within our control, those 302,000 employees. We settled 94% of our union contracts. One of the contracts was the ferry workers on the Staten Island Ferry. They were almost 13 years without a contract. Our police officers, our teachers, our DC-37 employees. And then after we settled with their presidents, they have to go and have the members vote. We've been getting a 94 to 98% ratification rate by union members who said this mayor got it. I'm a blue-collar mayor, man. You know, I would be no different than if you were the mayor or if you were the mayor. People who have come up the hard way, they know that, listen, we got to make sure working-class people can stay in the city. And that's the mindset that I have. There's never been a mayor that had a union card. I know what it is not to have a good pension. Or not to have a good health care plan, or not to get that raise, you know. You can't have city employees who are delivering services also have to be on the line to get the services because we're not giving them what they deserve. And that game has changed under this administration. We just did something with human service workers. Overwhelmingly women, almost 50% women of color, they were not being paid a suitable wage. Almost 80,000 of them. We just settled something last week with them. They couldn't believe it. They said, we've been fighting for this for years. And this mayor, when he was on the campaign trail, he said, I'm going to give you a suitable raise so that you can live in the city. And we accomplished that.
How much did that cost the city, or how much did you spend, you know, for that? What was the
exact dollar amount escapes me, but it didn't cost us. It was an investment.
Yeah.
There's a difference between cost and investment. We lose those human service workers, we will have a real issue in our city.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting point. I kind of phrase that question like that because you do have an obligation as a city to run it like a business. That's an investment. That's exactly what you're doing,
The
migrant crisis. I'm just saying, when there's $4 billion spent, that's effectively $1,000 per every adult resident of New York, right? Mm-hmm. Add everybody in, it's $500 if you take babies and kids and everybody else.
Right.
It's a lot of money, and if that's not getting us somewhere, right? If that's a fruitless policy, you're just wasting money, just like, you know,
there
you go blow money at a nightclub.
You're after head. And so, you know, doing this job, going back to your question, you have to be able to ignore the noise. I'm telling you, the noise will impact you. You have to become immune to booze. You have to become immune to, you know, people, you know, talking mess at you. You have to be focused and really guided. You have to have a North Star. For example, the Metro cards we gave, not Metro card, the food cards we gave to migrants and asylum seekers. I told my team we have to decrease the population of migrant asylum seekers. We have to bring down the cost of this by 30%. Because an emergency is
like $90K a year, I read.
Right, you know. If you have an emergency at your house, if you have a pipe that bursts, it's different from a preventive action than an emergency action. The plumber's going to charge you more. And so we said we need to bring down the cost. One of the areas we could bring down the cost was food. Instead of purchasing from these large conglomerates and the money not being recycled back in the community, we met Mocify, which is a MWBE, Women and Minority-Owned Business, and we stated that, hey, can we bring down the cost of food purchases? They say, yeah, you give them a food card, you won't have food waste, and people will buy what they want, and they will buy from the bodegas and the local stores in the communities. We saved $600,000 a month, over $7 million a year, and people were going into the local bodegas, local supermarkets, local stores, and recycling the money in the community instead of some large conglomerate where people were saying, I don't want this. I don't want to eat this. It was a real W. But people took that and said, oh, you're giving money to migrants. You're going to spend millions of dollars. No, we were giving them $13 a day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner that they wanted to eat. That's what we should be doing in all of our homeless shelters, you know?
Yep.
Instead of, you know, this way you put money back into the community where people hire locally and people are actually using the money to buy the things that they want.
One day, everyone's going to have a digital wallet and they're going to get direct.
That's my thing, man. I love that, man. That's one of my
things. Let's give Mayor Adams a shout out. His first three paychecks he took in Bitcoin, and that was when Bitcoin was down in the 20s because of Sam Bankman-Fried and everything. And today, Bitcoin's 68,000, and those first three paychecks are like triple paychecks.
Shout out to the mayor. And the goal of doing it is because government is, you can't govern from fear. You know, it's unbelievable how government is so afraid to be criticized. And so you just stay within this box. You know, everything is fearful. Can't do it, we'll be criticized. They're going to write a bad article about us. They're going to do this. I don't live that way. You know, using drones to inspect bridges and buildings so we could take down our scaffolds. Using technology that could help us to govern better. Using a cyber wallet. There's no reason people are not getting their paycheck through a cyber wallet. And if you get a low reduced fare Metro card, it should go right on that Metro card. We could use that data to better run our city. But there's a fear in this permanent government that you are constantly have to be bold enough and say, we're just not doing it that way anymore because there's so many self-interest and maintaining the status quo. And if you're not a disruptor, we've disrupted everything else from medicine to building to economy. The only thing that has not been disrupted is government.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one last thing because I know we're going to have to wrap up.
Yeah.
So your most precious assets are the kids in New York City.
Yes.
Our education system, and this is not just your administration, the one before, it just doesn't do a great job. You know, we've got the lion's share of kids are not at reading level.
Right.
It's a lot more complicated than good teachers. It's bad neighborhoods. It's food. It's
right.
How do you see that? How do you go to sleep at night? Is that the number one thing you worry about? You've got a chancellor who's now 3 years in. We've got more kids below grade level, probably because of COVID, than we've ever had. And so, like, this is what I don't sleep well with at night,
right,
thinking the future, an AI future, a crypto future, a digital future, and we've got kids that can't read and write. How are we gonna fix that?
Real issue. During the campaign trail, I don't know where I was coming from, but I saw a documentary that was really profound. Frontline documentary, The Age of AI. I encourage everyone to see that. It's an unbelievable documentary. Start off talking about the Go Master. That's the Chinese game playing Google computer on how to see if a computer can beat the Go Master. And everybody thought it was impossible. The Go Master won the first game. The computer won the four other games because it learned from the first game. And the Chinese leader, after they lost, convened all the world leaders into a room and said, by this date, we're going to master artificial intelligence, and by this other date, we're going to take over. They reformatted the entire educational system and started teaching the children differently. I brought a group of teachers in the room, and I showed them the methodologies that we're using to teach, and I said, I want to show you when the first time we did classrooms, here is the foam that we were using. And you see this antiquated foam that we were using that matched children sitting in the classroom with the row of desks same way. And I said, now I want to show you the foams we're using now, and I want to show you the methods we're using to teach. Same methods. We're in the iPhone age, but we're teaching in the Alexander Graham Bell age. You know, so we have to change our mindset to catch up. And if we don't, we're going to be left behind.
So how do you convince the teachers union, this big, giant education structure that's in New York City? Number one, what, with 900,000 students, I think, or
yes,
at least that we
yes
used to have, mm-hmm, to modernize, to AI-ize, to do, you know, the Khan Academy idea of AI for each kid. Like, how do we... It just feels like that's such a bureaucracy.
It is, brother. You cannot imagine the level of the bureaucracy. You must be intentional, and you must meet people where they are and take them where they ought to be. The big mistake we make sometimes is believing I have to start from where I am. People are not where I am. And so we need to show, how does this benefit you in a real way? And do hands-on projects, such as you live in NYCHA. You live in NYCHA. We did free broadband for all NYCHA residents. First time in history has ever been done. Giving children real on-the-ground problems to solve. You know, you have a high diabetes, high access to food. How about using some of that open space in NYCHA to build vertical farms, to build hydroponics? Getting young people engaged in real projects that they can see the results and see how using temperature control through AI is now, wait a minute, this is something else. Or creating AI to fix a damn problem with tickets. You know, you can't get a ticket settled. You know, you got a repair in your apartment. Hey, let's use AI to solve that. We're going to have to, it's almost like the Karate Kid moment where he thought he was washing the car just to learn that he was learning karate moves. You have to subtly let people think they're doing one thing, then all of a sudden they get introduced. Now, there are some real successes. We're outpacing the state in reading and math under Chancellor Banks. He has changed the phonics-based reading. It has changed it into phonics-based reading based on what they were doing before. The state is going to adopt it. I think the national government is going to adopt it. Our children now in their schools, they're learning breathing exercises, how to deal with self-care, mindfulness, yoga. Because we know you can't only be academically smart. You have to be emotionally intelligent. And you have to be able to control what you are feeling inside. Because these babies are broken after COVID. A lot of people don't realize what's going on. Increasing suicidal ideation, depression, mental health issues. Some of them have abandoned school altogether. We have to go find them and bring them back in. And we got to get away from, as you have proven to us, you know, that whole pathway, the only pathway to success is that if you have to graduate from college. No, let's meet children where they are. You know, some of them want to do things like what you're doing, you know. So there must be a pathway to doing these things. Those that we have lost, those who are we're losing, and those who want to excel in the academic stream.
Yeah. Well, let's be respectful of the mayor's time. I think it's incredible what a disruptor where you're coming from, really, with this. And I think that's what plays in so well to what we're talking about on Business Untitled, is that this, you know, you have faith, you have belief in this. It's about people, but it's also a business. We're competing with other cities, and we're also trying to make the people in this city most successful. But I think there's some really bold, amazing, interesting ideas. Mike, why don't I turn it over to you for our ounce of gold?
So we originally were going to call this an ounce of gold, but Mel loved Business Untitled, and he won. It was a three-man vote. I got outvoted. But we give everybody an ounce of gold. And I'm not sure the mayor can actually accept an ounce of gold without me getting arrested for bribery. Maybe we'll give you this ounce of gold, and you can just tell us what charity you want to donate to, and we'll donate it to the charity for you.
Yes.
But we asked the guest at the very end to give the viewers just one last thought, ounce of gold for people to take away.
True. And we all have it. You know, I think resiliency, you know, mom was just resilient. She was an unbelievable woman. She transitioned while I was campaigning for a mayor, and I still feel her presence every day. Energy never dies. It only transforms, and we're made up of energy, so mom just transformed to another level of existence. And I think the ounce of gold is believe in yourself. You know, I tell my son that, and I tell whoever's come into my orbit, just believe in yourself. A bend in the road is not the end of the road, as long as you're willing to make the turn. And I've hit some bends in the roads, and it has never been the end of the road. And so what I'm going through now, this is a shower compared to the typhoons that I've gone through. So I could deal with a shower every day.
Got to appreciate Mayor Adams.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, I got to give one shout out to JM Bullion, our sponsor. We love that Business Untitled got sponsored. They are the best direct-to-consumer gold place. Gold is today the highest level it's ever been on the history of the planet, right? $2,250. Gold is going higher because our government in D.C. and around the world can't balance their budget. So as long as we have politicians that can't balance their budget, stay long gold, stay long Bitcoin. Mayor, thanks for coming, buddy.
Thank you.